So there's a couple scriptures I'm going to share about serving. And first one is Mark 10:45. It says, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." And 1 Peter 4:10 says, "As each one has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards as the manifold grace of God." And then we read in Scripture about children, and in Mark 10, starting at verse 13, it says, "They brought the little children to him, that he might touch them. But the disciples rebuked those who brought them. But when Jesus saw it, he was greatly displeased, and said to them, 'Let the little children come to me, and do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of God. Assuredly, I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will by no means enter it.' And he took them up in his arms and his hand and laid his hands on them and blessed them." And I think, what a picture. And we in nursery have the opportunity to lift up little ones in our arms. So just to introduce myself, my name is Michelle Tuttle. I have served in the nursery here at Calvary Chapel, Philadelphia, for 20 years. My first 2 years, I was a volunteer that came on a monthly basis. My third year, I was asked to supervise one Sunday a month. And then starting 17 years ago, I became the coordinator for the nursery. So I've been overseeing the nursery here for 17 years now. And it has been a blessing. And some people think of nursery as babysitting. And it's not just babysitting. It is really preparing kids to be moving up into Sunday school, getting them comfortable in church, getting them ready to receive the word of the Lord. And it's a blessing to the families so that parents can be in service and be fed the word of God without interruption. Because, you know, if you have a kid that kind of fusses a lot and you're in the sanctuary, you might be worried about being called and being paged out of service. So we'll talk a little bit about things we do to try to prevent that. But, you know, so it's a place where many people also have their first interaction in the church. So that's another important thing that we're going to discuss. And then we're going to also start off by talking about vomit, blowout diapers, and just kidding. And snot, you know, but no, just kidding. That is a part of it. There is like the grossness and all the things that go along with taking care of babies. But really the heart of this ministry is to bless families, to make them feel welcome. Again, especially the way our particular nursery is set up, people see this counter and see this layout and they think, oh, this looks like somewhere I can come to ask questions. So even if they don't have a child in the nursery, they might stop back here to ask questions, where do I go with my child? And we try to really just stop what we're doing and walk and have somebody go take them and escort them to where they need to go, because we do not want them to feel overwhelmed on the first time here. It can often be overwhelming. You've already had to get all your kids ready, get them to church, and then now you don't know where you're going, and that can be stressful. So we want to make it not, you know, the least stressful experience as possible for them. So we're going to discuss in this workshop the procedural stuff, like the important things we need to know, all the procedures. But we're also going to really touch on the heart of the ministry and how we can bless families. So I'm going to briefly touch on scheduling. Not everybody involved in nursery is going to be the person doing the scheduling, but there are different ways that you could go about that. It depends on if your church has more than one service. We offer three services here Sunday morning. We have a Sunday evening prayer service, and we offer a midweek service on Wednesday evenings. So we do have nursery and Sunday school classes during all of those services. Now, if you only have, you know, one service at your church per week, then you might want to do your scheduling a little differently, because you want your volunteers to be fed the word. So if you only offer one service, you don't want them serving every single week. But if you have multiple services, then you have more flexibility where the volunteers can attend a service and serve at a service. So that's going to be one thing you would take into consideration when doing your scheduling. Since we do offer more than one service, most of our Sunday school, we try to schedule people for a month on and a month off, where they serve every Sunday that month at one of the service times. In nursery, we offer a little bit more of a flexible schedule because we do have people that want to serve, but they work some Sundays. They might have to travel for work. They might not always be here. So I do have some volunteers that serve a month on, a month off. I also have volunteers that serve once a month. Our old system was people did one service a month, and we still have people that do this one time a month, and they're content with that. That works for them. We have people that they might not know their schedule every month because of work commitments, so they let me know each month what dates they're available. And then we have people that do every other week, and then we have some really faithful people that serve every week year-round. And they're such a blessing to us. So it's an area where you might be able to offer a more flexible schedule because they're not teaching, and so you can have a little more flexibility in the nursery. And then if a bunch of people say, hey, I can't make it this week, you know, you can ask people to switch, and you can maybe have some backup people you can call if people are calling out sick in the morning. We do like to have in our room with children that are under a year, we do like to do one-on-one or as close to that as possible. With the kids over a year, you can have, you know, you don't necessarily have to do a one-on-one, but I would like to have at least one volunteer for every maybe three kids. So if you track your attendance, you kind of know how many volunteers that you may need. Now, we also have a system here for paging people. If all of a sudden service is starting, three volunteers just got caught out sick, or someone just had a car accident, they're stuck in traffic, and all of a sudden we've got double the amount of kids we normally have. In our case, we have a system. We have a number system. I have a keypad over there. I don't want to step away from the microphone, but we have a keypad that you can look at. There's a digital display in our sanctuary, and so we could put up, and we have a number we put up to notify volunteers that we need more help. And when we put that number up, usually a bunch of people come running back. If you don't have something like that at your church, maybe you could have a group of people that you text and say, hey, we just got a call out, anybody available? Whatever works for your church and with your volunteers. But it's nice to have a system for the emergency backup system, because you never know, you know, what a Sunday might bring. We had light attendance for a long time over the summer with people's vacations at our 10 o'clock service. And then all of a sudden one Sunday, our attendance doubled. And so you really don't know what a Sunday might bring. So review scheduling. For scheduling, I like to do, for me, I love Excel. I will use the program Excel for anything I can possibly use it for. So I do an Excel spreadsheet, and I'll have like a general list of the volunteers. And for me, I kind of got a little fancy and did some color code. You don't have to do all that, but I like the spreadsheet, and it lists who serves each week. There's four groups for people that are still on that old once a month schedule, and they rotate once every 4 weeks. But others, if they serve more often, I have their names in here, each service set separately, and then I write my notes if somebody says I'm going to be on vacation. Some people just might want to write it on paper or whatever works. Some churches might have some kind of software program. I think there are programs out there that can help you with scheduling. We don't currently use one of those. We might down the road, but whatever, again, works for you guys. And then for like a typical Sunday, I usually type a list like of this, who's coming each service, highlight their name when they arrive, and then if anybody extra, because we put the bat, I call it the bat signal, we put that code up that says we need help, we put their names here so we know who was here that Sunday. And so that's schedule, you know, the gist of what we do for scheduling. Safety and security is another issue. And there, I believe there's a separate workshop that's really delving into that. If you don't get a chance to attend that, you can listen to that. But I'm going to touch on it. So the big thing is have a plan. I remember we had a church plant in Kensington, and I went down there to consult with them on their Sunday school. And when I said, "What's your fire evacuation plan?" I just got the deer in headlights. Look, there was no plan. So that's the, so you want a plan for if you have to evacuate if the fire alarm goes off. Now, I've been, again, 20 years. We have, the only time the fire alarm went off, somebody burnt some toast in the building, and it set the fire alarm off. But we were notified immediately it was a false alarm, so we did not actually have to evacuate. But you would want a plan. And we do have, and you guys can look in the rooms after we're done, we have cribs with wheels on them, and those cribs fit through every doorway in this building. So we know where we're supposed to go, what hallways to go down, and we can put the children in those cribs. Now, if there's a fire, don't worry about the diaper bags. Don't worry about anything. Just get the kids out. Put the kids in the cribs. As you see, we have strollers in the hallway, so if we already have children in strollers, we will just keep them in the strollers and push them out to the designated meeting spot. Now, parents might want to try. They panic, and they might want to try and grab their kids, but we can't let them until we are outside and can have a formal dismissal process because we need to make sure that all of the children are accounted for. And so what we would do if a parent kind of got back to where we are, we'll say, "Glad you're here. You can help us walk alongside us, and we'll sort it all out when we go out to our back parking lot." So that's what we would do in that case. And then for lockdown, again, if your church doesn't have a procedure, it would be good to come up with one. In the times we live in, it's an unfortunate thing that we need to think about. So we do have curtains, blinds that come down on all the windows. We pull these shades down. We have things that cover any glass on the doors. And for these two rooms, all of our doors, our handles are kept in the locked position. So if I shut that door, it's locked. So what we do is we connect the top and the bottom and pull it shut. For doors that aren't half doors, we do have magnets, which you can look at in the door. So people, they pull the magnet if they want the door locked, but they don't accidentally lock themselves out of the room otherwise, because that magnet prevents the door from closing. So that's just another safety thing we do, and we have what's called the night locks or night guard locks that you guys can look at that the school installed for all the classrooms, and they help secure the bottom of the doors. So, and in that room over there, they'll just stay in that room, but these two rooms will filter in to the changing room. You want to make sure your phones are not going off, that you silence your phone. You don't want a bad actor that's in the building to hear somebody's phone and know that somebody's in that room. If they see doors shut, they're probably just going to move along to where they see they could do the most damage. And it's sad that we have to think about it, but I am glad we have a plan in place, because in my early years in nursery, this was the things that kept me up at night. And we do have a password that when lockdown is over, whoever comes to our door, if they don't give the password, we need to be ready to hit them over the head with a chair or something, because it could be somebody that's trying to break into the room. So if it's one of our security staff, we do have a security staff. I don't know if every church has a staff or a volunteer that does security, but we do have staff and volunteers that do security here. So if they come or one of the pastors comes, they will say the password before unlocking the door. And if we hear, say, Pastor Dave, you know his voice because he has the Australian accent. If I hear Pastor Dave at the door, I can't open it, even though I know it's Pastor Dave, if he doesn't say that password, because there could be somebody holding a gun to his head. And if there's any children in the hallways or any people in the hallways, if whoever is immediately there, you get them into that room. Anybody else that's out struggling in the hallway, security will get them. So that's how we do that procedure. So other safety things are the obvious. If you have a cabinets with cleaning supplies, you're going to want to get child safe locks. You're going to want to put in outlet protectors, all those normal safety things you would think of when childproofing a home or any type of a room. And custody issues are also, unfortunately, a thing that may happen. So if there is a custody issue, or an order of protection against a parent, we are notified. We usually have the custodial parent bring us paperwork. We note it in our system. We do electronic sign-in, which I'll talk about in a minute, but it is noted. So we know to be on a little bit more of a high alert with that child. only return the child to the people who are authorized to pick the child up. We just know to be very mindful of that. So that's another safety thing. Also, if toys start to break, there's little pieces come off that could be a choking hazard or something someone can get scratched on. Even if it's a favorite toy, just throw it out because we don't need anybody getting hurt or choking. So that is another important thing. So the arrival, we ask our volunteers to arrive 30 minutes before service. Rather than rushing in, we would like that time to be able to gather as a group, pray for the kids, pray for the day, pray for each other's needs, and it also gives us time. As you see, we do either typically two rooms at all services. There's usually two rooms, and a third room on our busy service, which is our 10 o'clock service. So we need to decide how we're breaking up the volunteers. So we want to do that and be settled in by 15 minutes prior to the service, which is when we typically start signing in. If it's Christmas or Easter, we try to start that process a little earlier because everybody wants to go get their seats. And it's a little busier. You know, you have the people that only come out on Christmas and Easter, so we want to allow a little extra time. So it is important for volunteers to be on time. It can be difficult when everybody's late and they think they're the only one that's late. And, you know, there's... One Wednesday night, I got a call from my friend. She said, "Can you come back to the nursery? I'm the only one back here." So I have a friend that coordinates for Wednesday evenings back here because we combine nursery 2 and 3 year olds back here on Wednesday night. And she was, one person was in traffic and the other person called out and she's like, and she knew I was in the building and can you come over right away? Because there's parents, you know, waiting. So we don't want parents to have to wait and say, oh, our volunteers are all late. So it is really best when serving to be really mindful about being on time. So that's an important thing. And communicating with coordinators, if you're not going to be able to make it in, I would tell people, I literally one time had somebody say to me, "I forgot, I'm going to Russia tomorrow." She did not forget she was going to Russia tomorrow, but she forgot to tell me. Now, that's a big trip. She was originally from Russia. She was going to go home to see her family. I assume this trip was planned like at least 6 months before. So I tell volunteers, if you know 6 months in advance, you're going to be on vacation when it's your date to serve, it is never too early to let me know so I can plan accordingly. Because if 5 people tell me on a Friday, "Oh, I forgot I'm going away," or "Hey, just got..." Don't do this. If somebody said, if you're scheduled to serve and somebody says, "Hey, you want to go down the shore for the weekend?" Please say no. Or at least check with your coordinator to see, will you be able to replace me? Because we do have a lot of people that get a better offer. And that's not the heart of serving. People sometimes don't realize the position they leave us in, and we don't have a volunteer vending machine where we can just pull out another volunteer. So it is, like, that'd be great, but we don't have that. I mean, I can do the bat signal, but that's not a guarantee. So it is important to have that. And let's see. Yeah, because a lot of times, yeah, we could suddenly be short 3 or 4 volunteers. Yes. So we've never, the question was, have we ever been short where we could not accept more children? There have been times where we asked a parent to wait until more volunteers arrived. In the earlier days, sometimes we did ask a parent to stay, but we've kind of really tightened up our rules where we really want everybody that's in the room. We will allow a parent to stay, which I'll get into, if they have a fussy child and they can only serve with their child, if they're trying to get their child used to the nursery. But because we want all of our volunteers to have background checks, then I will put up my bat signal, and I'll call on the radio to the other children's ministry staff members and say, do we have anybody extra somewhere? So sometimes we will move volunteers between age groups. So if I have extra volunteers and I feel like we can spare a volunteer or two, and I know another age group, like the 2-year-olds, it seems to happen a lot with the 2-year-olds and the 4-year-olds, sometimes the 3-year-olds, where they need an extra set of hands, then I'll send someone over there. So one thing that I was going to mention is that we wear radios. Well, every classroom has a radio. And our staff members, we all have these on us all morning for communication. If we need to call security, we will use this radio for security. If we need to if somebody needs more crafts, they get on the radio and call, and whoever is available will go get them more craft supplies. Whatever the communication need may be, we use radios. If your church doesn't have a radio system, you could do things like a group text or have a runner that can run to the classrooms and check on them, whatever works with your church. But we rely heavily on these radios. So I have not ever had a situation where we couldn't take kids. We just have maybe had a time where we would ask the parents to wait a few minutes till more volunteers arrive. So let's see. So for sign-in procedures, again, what your church, what each church does might look different. But whatever those procedures are, you want to stick to them, and you want to make sure that, that all the volunteers know how to do it. So we generally have volunteers that tend to be the people who do sign-in. And especially ones that are here every week, they know the kids' names, and so they might be the ones that do it on a regular basis. But if that person's out sick, it's good to have extra people that know how to do it. What we used to do was a card system. So we would have somebody new come. Anytime somebody new comes, and you guys can come up afterwards and look at this form, we have a form that they fill out, and we always ask them to print clearly, and if we can't read something on here, we assume that the staff member, in our case her name is Jen, who puts everything in the computer, I'm going to assume she can't read it either. And I can't tell you how many Monday mornings Jen and I both would sit together and play the "what do you think this says" game, and we would try to decipher forms. So it's really important that we make sure they print clearly, and if we can't read something, we'll say, "Oh, what does this say?" or "How do you spell this?" or they forget to put their zip code, whatever it may be. We get all their contact information and put them in our database. And it's good to have the address, because once they're 4 years old, they go to something called Kids Club during service, and there's puppets and worship and a lesson. And kids that are the Kids Club age, which is four years old through second grade, they get a birthday card each year mailed to their house. They also get, we do birthday goodie bags for the older kids as well. So, and then when we have all their contact information, it's also good for emergencies. We get the parents' phone numbers. If a parent doesn't show up to pick up their child, we can call them. And I guess I could share a story about that, because this could happen. We require parents to stay in the building. We are providing nursery and Sunday school to feed their kids, and so they can also be fed in the service. Well, one time I had a woman, and there was a language barrier. She came and asked me some questions and about the Sunday school, and I told her, I don't know how much, she may not have understood all of it, but I told her how it works. And she came back the next week, and she brought her child in pretty late. But we do offer for babies and toddlers that can't be separated from their parents, if they flip their lids and the parent, sometimes it's the parent that's not comfortable, we offer an overflow room where they can sit and watch the service with their child. So sometimes a parent will sit in that room until they are so frustrated with all the noise their child's making, or their child won't sit still, or they can't focus on watching the service on the screen, and they come and bring her. Then finally they give up and they say, okay, I'm going to put my child in the nursery. So when this woman came, I just thought she was coming late because that's what she had done. She drops her child off, and then she doesn't come to pick her child up. And we're getting concerned because it's getting late. And we've had instances, we always like to remind new families, please come right back to get your child. We have a different group of volunteers that comes in each service. Please don't go shopping in the bookstore or go to the pantry first or go to the coffee shop and get your latte, frappe, whatever. You know, just come get your kid first and then go do those things. And so it's getting late, and now the next service is starting. So we try calling the mom, and Pastor Dave was actually the children's ministry pastor at the time, the one who just spoke, and he calls. And here this mom just dropped her child off to get socialized, and she was out shopping. And she never asked us how late we were here, how long we would be in the building, when she needed to come back. She didn't know us. I don't understand the thought process that was going through her mind, but thankfully, we asked for cell phone numbers, and he was able to reach her and say, well, you need to come back and get your child. So she did. It took her a bit, but she did come back and get her child. It is important to have that contact information. And what we do when it's a child's first time is we really do want to explain our procedures. I feel like a flight attendant when they give the rundown on the airplane, but I always like to let the new families know that all of our volunteers have been very carefully vetted. Not only do we do background checks, but we have a questionnaire. We don't want anybody creeping in that's going to teach the kids something that's not biblically accurate. So we do have a pretty serious vetting process. And before they can serve, they do have a meeting with Chris Clark, our children's ministry pastor, and he lays out the expectations. He gets a read on if they're a good fit. So we're very careful with our volunteers. So I do let parents know that all of our volunteers have had background checks, that we offer Sunday school and nursery during all of our services. I give them all the times. I let them know that we give cups and bottles. We don't do solid food snacks in nursery with all the kids with food allergies, and they're not here that long. So I let them know that. I let them know we clean and sanitize the rooms and the toys between each service because I know a lot of people are concerned about germs, especially with the real little babies. So we let them know all of our procedures. And when they fill out the form, we give them a card with a temporary number. They have to come back with this card at pickup time, and they have to sign, and the signatures need to match. Because if we have a new person we've never met, you know how it is. We might not even recognize them when they come back. An hour later, we've just been dealing with, 20-something screaming children, and they come back, and, we might not recognize them. It's the first time meeting them. So we want to see that the signatures match, so we tell them whoever signs in has to sign out. We match signatures. If they have, six kids and the parents might split up, I'll tell both parents to put their signature. And then they get a temporary number the first time, and then if we need to page them during the service, this number comes up on a digital display in the sanctuary and in our overflow room. Now, if your church offers any other satellite locations, we do have a Spanish translation service. And it's upstairs in our school cafeteria. And for that service, there's not a digital display in that room. So we have to have a different system for that room. So we get a list of who to text, or volunteers that we can text, and say, we need this parent for this child, and we let them know which parent to get. So that's our system. So you need to think those things through. How are you going to get a parent? Now, in the early days, before we had this number system where we could put a number in a keypad and page a parent, all the parents would sit in one section of the sanctuary. They would sit in the same area, and somebody would walk around with their child's number on a card and walk up and down the aisle. So that's something you could do if you don't have a fancy system, or you could have a system where you text the parent. If you have the number, you could text the parent. They just make sure they have their phone on vibrate so they're not disrupting the service and it's not ringing. We've had, I think, a phone went off, an alarm went off during one of the sessions, and that happens. That we've had it ring during service. I've seen people answer phones during service and start talking in the sanctuary. So we don't want their phones going off. So if you need to text them, I would say just remind them, put their phone on silent. We'll text you if we need you. And that's another thing, an important thing with new families is to ask that family, what is your preference? If some parents will get really annoyed at me if I call them because their child is crying. They don't care if their child is screaming their head off or what their child is doing and how much their child is melting down. They want to be in that service, and they will get annoyed. Or they just really want us to work with their child. They want their child to get used to that separation. And then we have other parents. We literally recently had a parent say, if my child just makes a sad face, please call me. So some are have different levels of how comfortable they are with their child fussing. And we actually, and they're good friends of mine, but there was a couple where both the husband and wife had different tolerance levels. So I knew when the wife wasn't here, the husband's like, don't call me. But if she was here, I'd call right away if her child fussed, because I knew both their comfort levels. So it's really good to get to find that out. Ask them, do you want to be called right away? Some parents will say, let them cry for 20 minutes, and if they're still crying, get me. They might give you a time, like whatever it is, have scrap paper, write a note, but we want them to feel like they will be respected. Whatever it their preference is, we have to respect that and to do what they prefer. So we explain all the procedures. We ask them what their preference is regarding being paged. We also ask them about the diapers. Some parents don't want anybody else changing their child. So if they say, I want to be called, then we will call them. If they don't care, then we'll change the diapers. We do have a policy. Now, Pastor Gill talked yesterday about changing diapers back in the day. Currently, just because false accusations in the world and the society that we live in, we do not have any volunteers under the age of 18 change diapers, and we don't ask the men volunteers to change diapers. So yay for the men, because my son has been serving with me since 2019, and he doesn't have to change diapers. But he does handle all of the fussiest of children, and he is like the baby whisperer. And we have some guy volunteers that the kids prefer men, and they want, that's who comforts them. And so there are kids that won't stay if they don't see my son or they don't see another male volunteer that they like. They're like, where'd they go? And that's just something that we do. Every church can make up their own mind on that, but that's just a policy that we implement. It just, we want to protect our volunteers. And we also have a policy in all of our age groups. You have to have two volunteers in a room before you accept children, or an adult and two junior ministers, which would be volunteers under the age of 18. Because we don't want an adult and a junior minister alone and then having kids in. So we want two if they're under 18. So that protects us. It makes, you know, you also have to see, too, you might have your church might have an insurance company that says we're not going to cover you if you don't have certain rules in place. So you want to find that out as well. But we always have a two-deep policy per room. And now somebody is going in the changing room, they can go and change the diaper, because as you see, we have a big window here in view of a camera, and there's usually a volunteer right here behind the counter, so they can go in. We don't need two people to go in to change a diaper. But we want to make sure that the volunteer, if we're short on help and there's only two volunteers in the room, you don't want one leaving and going in the changing room and leaving one person by themselves with like three or four kids. So in that case, whoever's at the counter doing sign-in, if they're not signing in at the moment, they can jump in the room or go run, change the diaper or grab a volunteer from another room. But we always want to make sure we have two volunteers. And we do have cameras throughout our building, the nursery, all these rooms do have the windows so that people can see what is going on, and we want to have that transparency. We want families to be comfortable leaving their kids here. And so any special instructions, whether it's a new child or a child that's been coming, we've had kids come through here with some pretty serious health issues. Cystic fibrosis, where we had to tell volunteers, before you touch a child, sanitize your hands. We have to be really careful if there's any medical issues. If there is a child in the room with a milk allergy, whoever assigns that child in will let all of the volunteers in the room know. And then we'll be especially careful, because we do let the kids, if they have a cup or bottle, we'll let them have it. But if we know there's a child with a milk allergy in the room, we are not going to let that child just sit, walk around with the cup, sit it down, and another kid, kid will pick up another child's cup and start drinking out of it. So we supervise the cups. As soon as they're done with it, we take it back. We put it up somewhere high or back in their diaper bag. And when we bring all of our things, the diaper bags, the cups, everything gets a label. We just use for their stuff like masking tape, especially because little babies are so tiny, they don't need a big giant name tag sticker. So many times we'll just, and especially if they are in their car seat asleep, we're not going to wake them up and pull them out of the car seat. And we'll just put a little thing with their name and their number on it and put it like on their foot, on their pant leg. If they're awake or whatever, we'll put it on their back if they're not like coming in a car seat. But we label everything, their cups. We don't want to give someone the wrong cup. We don't want to give someone the wrong bottle, especially because of allergies, and some kids are on specific formula. Some kids have a bottle with pumped breast milk. You don't want to mix up bottles and cups. So you want to label diaper bags. Anything that is coming in, you want to make sure that you label it. And as far as illnesses, don't serve while sick. You would think you wouldn't have to say that. But also don't accept children who are clearly sick. I had parents will try to pretend their kid's not sick because they want a break, they want to go into service, they don't want to miss church, and I understand. But they will try, and they do this with school too, they try give the kids some Tylenol or something and try to slip them past, you know, and hope that they don't notice that they're sick. So I had a teenager come and bring his little brother and flop him on the counter. Mom was still down the other end of the hallway. And he said, "My brother's been sick, and he's been coughing and sneezing, and he has a sore throat, I think, and he has orange juice. So you can give him his orange juice. It'll be good for him, right?" So then mom comes down the hallway, and I said, "Oh, your son said the baby's sick." And he's a toddler, you know. And she said, "Oh, no, he's not sick." And I said, "Well, your son just told me X, Y, and Z." Well, now she can't lie in front of her son. And I said, "Look, we can't accept children that are sick," but I showed her grace. And I said, "Would you be okay if I put your child in a stroller alone, just not in a double stroller, and walked your child in the hallway during service?" I said, "It's either that or you can go in overflow room." And then she said, "Oh yeah, you can put the baby in a stroller." So that's what we did. And, yeah, I did show grace and put the baby in a stroller. But again, we do have kids with things like cystic fibrosis, where medical conditions where if they get sick, it's serious. So if you see that a kid is dripping green snot when they come in, like sometimes it's allergies, and usually you can tell if it's clear, or they're teething and they got a runny nose. We understand that. But if they are clearly sick, it just, you say it in a loving way, but no, we can't take your child. We have to love all the kids in the room, and we don't want anybody to get sick, and we offer them to go sit in the overflow room. And if they do come in, and then we discover they are sick, they start showing symptoms, then at that point we will call the parent right away and let them know. And sometimes they might not have been sick before, and the fever comes on. So that happens. We talked about the drinks. It's really important to get to know what settles each child, because every child is different. We have kids, most of our kids love music, and we'll play praise baby music. Many like VeggieTales. We usually only show, if we put something on the TV, it's Christian. But we do have kids that also have sensory issues and might not like the music. We have kids that love bubbles. We have kids that are terrified by bubbles. Although most of them love bubbles, so I highly recommend a bubble machine. We have over there a nice bubble machine, and you just put little bubbles in it, and it makes tons of bubbles, and the kids say it's a bubble party, and they love it. So we try to do fun things, whatever tricks work. It might be different for each kid. I've had kids that wanted to be swaddled up tight when they were real little, kids that just love music, kids that just, they're happy if you don't put them down the whole service. If you put them down, it's all over. So you get to know each individual kid, their personality, what they like. We have one child that will scream. It's kind of the child Dave was talking about, you know, the one that they come down the hall and they scream or whatever. And then and my friend realized he likes to color. And then we have another one that, this was like years and years ago. He's older now. He's a teenager and lives in Georgia, but we're still in touch. And this child, he would cry and cry and cry for no apparent reason. And we were doing every trick. We were breaking rules. We were sneaking him out in the hall and letting him have Cheerios because his mom worked here. We were doing all the things that, you know, everything we could so his mom could be in service, so she could be working in the bookstore. And finally, one of my friends realized, if I just ignore him, he will stop. And she let him, and he threw his tantrum on the floor and he would stop. Over the years, I've had just many, many things like that where the kids just did not want to be. I had a mom, and again, I'm still in touch with her. They live in the New England area now. And her kids, it's interesting because the families like to know you remember them. And when I talk to her kids, the kids still ask me to this day, like, to tell them the stories of when they were in nursery. So the one daughter who's 21 now would say, "Tell me about, you know, I was always good. I never cried." This girl, she had a severe medical condition, a genetic disorder, where she had webbed fingers, webbed toes, webbed back of her legs. She couldn't straighten her legs, and she had to have all these surgeries. And she was the happiest kid on the planet, and she never, ever cried. She cried one time for about a second because a kid hit her, and then she stopped. And she would always say, "Tell me that story. Tell that story." She'd love to hear that story. Now, her sister, on the other hand, who had nothing wrong with her and no excuse, screamed her head off the entire service every single week. Her mom was one of our volunteers, so basically her mom just ended up serving every week, and sometimes she would even cry when her mom was here. So you don't really know what to expect. Every kid is different, and some kids really do have separation anxiety. Some kids will try to play you, and they're just mad, and they want you to get their parent. And there was one, this child was already two, but the volunteer would say, okay, I'm going to put your mom's number up. And the child knew what that meant. The child caught on to what that meant. So eventually the volunteer would say they were putting the number up and then kind of not get around to it, and the child would stay for the whole service. But just telling the child, oh, we're putting the number up, appeased the child. So every child has their own personality, their quirks, their things that they like, and it's actually really cool because when Dave was talking about you don't know what, you know, child's going to grow up to be or do, I think about that so often. When I'm holding a baby, I'm just like, what are they going to be, a pastor? Are they going to be a ministry leader? Are they going to be in a mission field? Like, what is the Lord going to do in their life? And I really think about it. And if I'm rocking them, I might pray over them. Even if I'm changing their diaper, I might pray over them if they're not screaming at me because I'm changing their diaper. So that's another thing, you know, that it's just like, it's such a blessing and so humbling. Like, people are entrusting us with their babies, with their children. Like, that's a big deal, and I don't take that lightly. And it's such a blessing. And the blessing of being able to have these children in the nursery, watch them grow up in the church, and get to know their families. And some of them come back when they're teenagers and serve with us. And that is the coolest thing, when you get to see their story unfolding. And see, other things to consider. Volunteers should plan to stay and clean up. We want sign-out time to be orderly. So we try to be very orderly, grab the kids' diaper bags, get things lined up, hand them out to the person who's doing sign-out. If there's a child that's really starting to lose their mind towards the end of service, often we'll put that parent's number up, especially if we know it's somebody who's been coming here for years. We know they're already a believer. If we think that they're new and they might be responding to an altar call, we might not try to call. But if it's somebody that we know won't mind if we put the number up because their child's already crying, and we know when they see other kids get picked up before them, they're really going to be crying, then we will, at that point, you know, put the number up and have them come pick their child up first. So we use our judgment with things like that. And another thing that is important, too, there's a couple other things for during the service. If a child gets hurt, injured in any way, we have an accident report form that we fill out, and we have the parents sign it so they can't say we didn't notify them. Usually in nursery, it is an issue of they're learning to walk, they lost their balance, they fell and bumped their head on a toy. That is my most common accident report. It's not even often anymore, but that's the thing that would happen the most. We do have occasions where we have kids with behavioral issues, the biters, the smackers, the scratchers. And one time we even had a child in a crib. So what we do, if it's extreme, like, we will have a one-on-one with that child. I'll say, can you just be on top of that child so they don't hit anybody or bite them? And so I'll have the volunteer watch them closely. If it's really out of hand, there have been times where we would maybe put the child in a crib with some toys to play with, or take them out in a stroller. And we would tell the parents, hey, this is what we're going to do. Are you okay with that? And one time we had a little girl that the grandparents used to bring her, and they said, oh, yeah, that's fine. You can put her in the crib. We put her in the crib. And I went in the changing room. My granddaughter was here in nursery that day. She was a baby, and I was changing her diaper. And all of a sudden I hear screaming from the room. Well, that girl reached out through the crib and pulled the hair of a child walking by. So sometimes you do, you know, you have these things that you find ways to deal with those issues. And so that's important. And then we want to also, it's so easy when we're in a room serving with other adults to get into our conversations. And we really don't want to get so into a conversation that we're getting distracted from paying attention to the kids, especially then if someone gets hurt. Or you've got the kids that don't understand personal space, and they're just irritating every other child because they want to hug them. And they don't understand the child doesn't want a big bear hug right now. And so we actually just had that happen recently where a child was trying to hug everybody. And, you know, they're not even trying to be mean. They just don't know that they're making this other child cry because they're annoying them. And so we really want to watch for all those things. And phones. We don't want to be on our phones calling and texting and fooling around on our, that's especially a thing you have to watch out for with teenage volunteers. There's different, you know, things that can happen when you're distracted with your phone. So we have like a no phone policy unless there's something urgent and, you know, step out of the room or, you know, with the phone. Let's see. Okay, so back to the vomit and blowout diapers. We do offer smocks. Most of us don't wear them because they're not the most attractive thing. But if you see hanging up in there, we do have smocks if people want to wear them. I do keep emergency shirts. So it's a good thing to keep your nursery supplied with emergency clothes for kids and maybe some T-shirts. I usually have some extra Vacation Bible School T-shirts. Keep them back here for adults and kids because people do get thrown up on. I've had blowout diapers or the poop got on my shirt. Pee often has gotten. I've often been covered in all kinds of fluids from the children. So smocks are great. Emergency shirts are great. All of our emergency baby clothes were donated. People bring in donations. So when people ask us, do you take donations? I always say yes. If I don't use the clothes here, I put them on this table. Parents can take what they need. If stuff sits here too long, I send it to the Rock, our church plant in Kensington. It gets used. Toys, whatever it may be. So I do take donations. If the pantry gets baby food or formula donations, we put it over here on this table as well. So you can always take donations to have emergency clothes in your nursery. People donate diapers their kids have grown out of. Once in a while, I have to buy some emergency diapers. But in general, that's something we already have. We have a cleaning fluid we use to sanitize the toys, so you want to decide what you want to use to clean your toys. So there's different supplies that you're going to want to have. We keep, you know, get laundry detergent. We do have a washer and dryer here. So all the cleaning rags we use, the smocks, we keep baby blankets. Again, they were all donated, but we have, like, blankets and crib sheets back here. We wash them after they're used. But if you don't have a washer at your church, you can see if one of the volunteers would be so kind to take the stuff home and wash it. But there's it's definitely good to have all these emergency supplies. We have diapers, wipes, all the things that we could need. So it's good to have that. It's good to be attentive if a child sometimes children, they're not sick, but they get so worked up that they throw up. And we had that happen one time. It was in this room, and it was an older child, the first time here, and the child got so worked up because she was so anxious and was crying so much that she threw up all over the floor. She apparently maybe had Apple Jacks for breakfast because that's what it looked like, and it was so gross. And there was, you know, kids crawling all over the floor, and it was such a mess that I actually had to evacuate the room. I had to had the volunteers take all the kids through the changing room into the other room, and I had maintenance come in and clean it up. It was like that bad. And then when the mom comes back, the mom said, oh, yeah, she does that all the time when she gets upset. And I thought, well, that would have been nice to know. So it is good to ask the parents, is there anything we need to know? Because that's kind of a thing. We also had a situation recently where a child that's not usually fussy was fussing, and we weren't sure what was going on, so we were calling the father, and a volunteer was standing here next to me holding him, and we put the number up, and I said, he's going to throw up. So she held him out away from her, and then she thought he was done. But he wasn't. And both of us, between two grown adults, we couldn't think to pull the trash can over, to hold him over the trash can, that he could spit into the trash can. So just make a note, utilize the trash can if someone's sick. But we learned that the hard way. And this poor volunteer really had to utilize the emergency clothes I had in the back. So sorry that that's a gross thing, but that's stuff that we do encounter, obviously, in the nursery. And then let's see. So just, again, ministering to families, I think it's important to memorize names. When you see a kid coming down the hallway and you get excited and you like squeal their name like, hey, Zoe, or hey, whatever the name may be, and we get all kinds of names. But when they know that you remember their kid's name, that means the world to parents. And so that's important, especially when you have multiple kids come through from the same family and you remember all their names. I've had parents say, I can't believe you remember all my kids' names. But it makes them feel valued, like they're an important part of the church family. So that is a really important thing to do. It's good to just form bonds with the family. Like I said, I've had kids grow up and then come in and serve in either nursery or other areas of the Sunday school. It's good to communicate with the families what their kids did that day. And, hey, guess what? They were saying new words. They were sharing a toy. There was a kid crying, and they were trying to comfort the other kid. That is such a blessing to the parent to hear what their kid did and hear good things. Now, sometimes you might have to share a bad thing, but if you do it in a loving way, if their kid did bite somebody, you know, and you're like, I have to let you know your child bit someone or hit somebody, you know, I let them know, hey, I had a kid that used to hide under the desk, and now he's been serving with me since 2019. And he used to, like, be really rude to his teacher and hide under a desk. And, you know, so, or I'll say, my grandson on the way here, I have to say, no hitting, no pinching, no scratching. Don't tell anybody to be quiet or shut up. Don't, you know, I have to go through. We have a whole list with my grandson that we go through. So I want parents to know they are not the only kid. Mm-hmm. Who, I mean, we've had many a biter, many a scratcher, many a crier, and I want them to know. We are used to this. This is what we are here for. It's okay. So if you have, they need to know because if their child's in daycare, they need to watch out for biting behaviors. But you want to tell them in a loving way and make them feel, you don't want them to not feel like they can bring their kid back. Yes?
Have you ever had a child that you guys really couldn't
Okay, so the question is, have we ever had a child that we really couldn't work with or was out of control? In nursery, we've had some that were difficult, but we've never said, you can't bring your child. We've always found a way to work with them.
Like finding a plan, like putting a plan
in place of how to keep our kids safe. Yes, so we always do put a plan in place. So if we know it's you know, this kid is really going to be hurting people. And sometimes a parent will tell us when they drop them off, oh, this has been a problem in the preschool, the daycare. At that point, we do really make sure that that child is not going to hurt. Like, we'll take them in the hallway in the stroller if we have to. Or sit and play with them. I have a friend who told me her son did that. So we sat behind the counter and played. We have a thing of blocks back here. We pulled some toys out. So we will find a way. It might get more tricky in special needs. And then that's why they have a quiet room where they can bring a child to the quiet room. But we usually do whatever we can to find a way to work with a child. We did have one special need parent years ago just stop bringing their child because they felt their child's behavior was too out of control. And he was a teenager at the time, and he was large and difficult to work with. And he ended up, in that case, needed to go under a residential program. But that was the parent making the choice. It wasn't us saying that they couldn't come. So we would do our best to try to work with them. And but, yeah, so anything you need to share with them, if we know a child has a medical condition, stop the family and say, hey, can I pray with you? If they have an upcoming surgery, you can get really busy on a Sunday or during a midweek service. It gets busy, but don't ever miss an opportunity to take that moment and stop and pray with a family. That is so, so important. I remember there was a family that I did stop and pray with. I said, you want to come back here? Their daughter was going to be having surgery. And I said, we'll go in the – I brought the husband and the wife, the daughter, into the – we went back in the changing room, and we prayed. And that mom said she was so touched by that. It meant so much. She felt so welcome here. And then later, she ended up – when she was having her second child, she asked us to participate in letting her husband know. And so she packed a shirt in the diaper bag that we were to change her child into that said, I am a big sister. And we did that, and we were part of the birth, the pregnancy announcement to the father, and we were all back here crying. That same woman ended up later being a volunteer back here. And one day I put my bat signal up because we were busy, and she came back, and she's helping, and she comes to this door right here and looks out the door at me and said that her daughter just took her first steps. And if she hadn't come to the bat signal, she would have missed it. So that was cool. We were part of the first steps. The daughters all, as they got older, ended up serving in Sunday school. They've moved out of state now, but they all ended up serving. The whole family served here. It all stemmed from one time praying, and they felt welcome. And so it's really important that the families do feel valued, welcome. If there's, you know, I let moms know when women's ministry events are coming up. You let the dads know when the men's ministry stuff. Like if you know there's something that might interest them, if they have a special needs child, you let them know if you have special needs ministry, what is going on with that. And I'm going to read this poem. Rose, who used to be part of our children's ministry staff, has moved to Florida, but she found this poem and called My Turn in the Nursery. And it says, last Sunday was my turn in the nursery to work. My heart wasn't in it, and my feelings were hurt. A child from its mother did not want to part, and it cried a lot with its broken heart. A prayer that could that soon the hour would end, then I could relax, no more children to tend. Soon the hour was over, felt good to be free, and I said, once a month is too much for me. That very next Sunday, I sat in the pew, a very good sermon, but visitors were few. But down came a woman, and her soul was saved, that she was the mother of that, and she was the mother of that crying babe. Then it dawned on me that I had been part of one being saved, giving God their heart. From that day on, I would never dread working in the nursery while souls were being fed. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend from this church here, and I didn't know this right away, but she had started coming to church here with her son. She wanted to come to church, and she got saved at some point, and she was married. Her husband was Muslim, and she asked him to come to church. So I guess he did, maybe to humor her or for whatever reason. And he came, and he was coming, ended up coming here for a few years, and then he suddenly died of a heart attack unexpectedly. And after he died, she said to me that the reason he kept coming back was because something I said to him one day. I will never take lightly this service, because he said that I made him feel so welcome and that he was going to keep coming back. And he got saved, and then they had their son dedicated, and you know, sometimes if we might not realize what somebody's going through, they need that attention. So that is all that I have to share. Does anybody have any questions? Yes.
Yes, we have incident reports for injuries. Do you have anything for behavioral reporting? You know, I know we share with parents, but like, if there's a behavior that's consistent and it's, let's say, troublesome.
So we don't. That could be something we could consider. If the question was, do we have a behavioral report if there's repeated issues with behavior? So usually it's a conversation with the parent. That is something we could consider. Now, there is a little additional paperwork for special needs students because we need to be more aware of the situation. So there is special paperwork that the parents fill out, and they keep documentation for their behavioral issues. But right now, with us, it is all verbal conversations with the volunteers or Pastor Chris if needed.